It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 268. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, with the help of Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News, we recap 2017 football signing day. Brandon explains what position groups look good going into next season and which feel a little too light. Matt and I then talk hoops, Super Bowl, signing day, and more. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And listen to Brandon and I talk about signing day right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back.
Hey, always good to be back, Adam.
So, of course, signing day was last week. We didn't really do a pre-signing day show because it seems like we end up repeating ourselves a lot when we do two shows on the topic. So this time we're just doing a recap. And so we'll start off with maybe the obvious place to start off, maybe not. But obviously the two big recruits that came in this signing class, at least by most of the scouting services, were Longi Tuifua and Chaz Ahu. So tell us a little bit about each of those guys and why you think they'll make a big impact for the Cougars. You know, it'll vary depending on when they play, but what do you think of those two?
Well, I'll start off with Chaz Ahu. I kind of designated him as the recruit BYU had to get for a lot of factors. I mean, how inside do you need to be? His dad's on BYU staff. And almost every practice, I looked around and he was there. I saw him all season long. He was in at that football facility a lot. And if BYU's not going to attract a kid like that who has mission plans, I believe he's going to play a year and then leave on a mission is kind of the plan right now. But if they're not going to get that four-star guy, what four-star guy are they going to get is kind of how I saw it. And there were a lot of things working in BYU's favor. Obviously, the new coaching staff, he was very outspoken about how that just really, really flipped him more than anything else. And but also, his favorite starting out was UCLA, and UCLA just did not have a good year. There's no momentum for UCLA. There's no reason, wow, I need to go to UCLA. They're 10-2. They're Rose Bowl. No, they're terrible. They're underachieving. So with that as the primary option, and it was the primary option until late, I think it was very clear that BYU was the best suitor and in his mind, and they got him. It was a very necessary pickup for BYU. Then Longi Tuifua, there's three guys BYU signed in the state that I don't think they would have signed even 2 years ago. And Longi Tuifua would certainly be one of those guys. He's a guy that committed to Oregon. And then when Oregon just blew up and everything went south, he opened up his recruitment again. And a guy like that invariably goes to Utah. Almost invariably goes to Utah every single time. And I kind of put these guys in the same category would be a Longi Tuifua, a Lorenzo Faatea, and Alden Tofa. And I was able to cover Faate is a defensive lineman from Hunter High School, Tofa is a defensive lineman from West Jordan. And when you look at the state of Utah, what the state of Utah produces, it's defensive linemen. That's what the state produces. You look at the top of recruit from the state of Utah, it's almost always going to be a defensive lineman. And BYU hasn't been able to tap into that very effectively. Utah has. And I thought it was very notable talking to Alden Tofa, asking him where he always thought he was going to go. And he says, I always thought I'd go to Utah until about a month or a little over a month before signing day, where BYU got on him. And I think that's the big switch you're seeing. Everyone wants to know what the Kalani effect is. I think with those three guys and Chaz Ahu, you're seeing a direct correlation to what Kalani Sitake is bringing to the table. You're bringing an exciting defense, a defense where these guys are going to make plays. They're not just sitting in an odd front, just holding gaps while linebackers make plays. No, this defense is designed for them to make plays. That's very attractive to kids. The Polynesian connection is obviously big, and BYU just needs to become that place where these guys think, yeah, this is where I go. It's not Utah anymore. It's BYU, and I think they make great strides with that. And Utah wanted all three of those guys. I mean, obviously, you get no, they didn't recruit him that hard up, but believe me, Utah would have had scholarships for all three of those guys had they reciprocated the interest. So
Yeah.
I think that's a big gain, and I think it's a very positive thing going forward. Obviously, you want to pair that with prime defensive back talent, which is very difficult for BYU. A defensive line should be a cinch. It should be a cinch. BYU should be pulling kids like that every year. But pairing that with the effective defensive backs that Utah's been able to do, and basically the same defensive alignment, that we all know how difficult that is. They got some decent ones this year, but no one that's going to like. I mean, no one even close to a four-star guy. So we'll see how that's implemented and how that improves. But I think certainly you can see strides made with this recruiting class.
Yeah, so you mentioned those three defensive linemen, and I'm with you. I think that's a big deal. And in the years coming, I think the defense that they're playing is going to be heavily benefited by having some guys that can make plays up front in both the passing and run game. Let's talk about who else in this class might be an impact player. There's several tight ends. There's some offensive linemen. Of the remaining folks we haven't talked about, is there anybody that you think 4 or 5 years from now, we'll be saying, "Wow, that was quite a get."
There's two guys. I really like Isaac Rex, just because of the position he plays, tight end, and I think his film was really impressive. I think he could be a tremendous player. The guy, I hate using the under the radar thing because that's kind of how we describe every recruit that wasn't heavily recruited. But Tyler Batty from Payson, I like talking to former players, like guys whose opinion I trust, and they say he just blows them away with his film. He played for Payson High School, which is literally the bottom of the barrel of Utah high school sports. It's a very, very down program. It struggles to win games against even the lowliest opponent. And he didn't transfer out, which I think is remarkable in this day and age where a kid that talented stays in place for Payson High School. I think it might say a lot about him just as far as just his stick-to-itiveness, and that he's not out for the glory. He just wants to improve himself, and he's a down-home kid. And guys I talk to, they're blown away by him. They think he's a very talented player. He's 6'5", 235, guy that's probably going to play defensive end. And I'll tell you, the defensive end competition at defensive tackle is going to be very, very fierce very soon at BYU. There's a lot of them. A lot of them. And another guy I'd mentioned is Ben Bywater. He's a linebacker from Olympus and kind of a latecomer, a guy who's kind of raw, but a guy that really, really impressed a lot of people in camps and whatnot. So I'd probably pinpoint those two if you're talking about guys down the road that aren't all that heralded that I could see contributing well later on. So anyway, I'll do your podcast 3 or 4 years from now. We'll see if I'm right.
Well, you've been doing it for like 4 years, so that's realistic. Though my wife, if we do it another 4 years, I don't. I think she's not so sure that's going to happen. But let's say you mentioned, you know, they've got these defensive ends coming in, and you look at this class, and if you step back from the names and just look at, you know, film and stuff, you say, wow, I mean, they've got some talented defensive linemen. And there were some offensive linemen, a couple of tight ends who, and obviously they want to do more with the tight end and in Ty Detmer's new offense. But one thing I saw that a lot of people talked about during the season and certainly was true coming into the recruiting season was a lack of depth at wide receiver. Looking at this class, maybe, I mean, depends on where a couple of these guys end up playing because a couple of them their position is to be determined, but is this a, do you think that's still an ongoing issue for them, or do you think no, some of these guys are maybe better, and some of these guys that are defensive backs are probably play the other way anyway?
It's a glaring weakness from this class. There's no question, and that's always going to be the toughest position for BYU to recruit is just true speed of the skill position areas. It's something BYU historically has struggled at, and I don't see an easy fix to that. I think it's going to continue to be just a sticking point where you have to get in on a kid. I mean, you look at the Jamal Williams recruitment. That has to be the model. And Jamal wasn't really a speed guy, but just a highly skilled double minority is what you call them. Just guys that know how to make plays. Just a true skill position guy. You got to get in early. That's so imperative for BYU if you're going to compete with the big teams for a non-LDS out-of-state athlete. And so just continuing to do that, I think, can reap benefits. But yeah, you look at this class, that's the one glaring weakness, is just lack of true speed at skill position players. Four or even three-star guys is kind of what you want to make up there. So we'll see how that's implemented. And I think a very underrated aspect of this class is the transfers. I still think there's more transfers on the way. In fact, I know there is. And those coming off missions, there's a very impressive incoming class just off of those guys. Talk about guys like Wing Kirby, who transferred from Oregon, Ula Tulatau, who's transferring over from Wisconsin. These guys were prime recruits but back when they were being recruited out of high school. Joe Tukuafu and John Vaca, I think, could be an immediate contributor on the offensive line, which is a position I really think BYU needs to shore up a lot more talent and efficiency with that offensive front. So, yeah, there's a lot of guys coming in, a lot of guys.
You and I have talked about this, I think, almost every time we talk recruiting, is that, you know, obviously a bunch of these guys, as I was going through the list and they were doing the signing on signing day, a bunch of these guys are mission first guys. So obviously there's a big chunk of this class that won't see the field till 2019, if their plans go as they have them today. But you talked about what's coming in. So looking at the roster as it's constituted now, with these return missionaries, transfers. I mean, is there a position that you think has taken a step forward? And then we'll get to in a minute to a position group that maybe headed in the wrong direction. But let's start positive. What group do you think is going to benefit most from all of the bodies that are coming in that are going to play in 2017?
There's absolutely no question it's the defensive line. I don't think it's really even close, to be honest with you. I think the quality and the amount of defensive linemen they got coming in on tap is very impressive. I think that's definitely the position. Then next, I'd probably put tight end. You signed two very good ones in Bentley Hanshaw and Isaac Rex. And then you have a guy who was a really big recruit coming off a mission is Matt Bushman. A guy I know people are very – and these guys have to be stoked. I mean, imagine if you're Matt Bushman and you signed with BYU just thinking, oh, am I really going to fit in here? They never used the tight end to what you're coming home to now. I mean, he's got to be stoked, and there's not really an established tight end at BYU currently. So it's going to be a very fun position to watch. And then, of course, you have Marone Pututau. He's going to make the switch from receiver to tight end. So, yeah, I'd say defensive line and then tight end, probably in that order.
And then, so the flip side, what group do you think maybe has taken a step back?
It's hard to say they've stepped back just because they weren't very good last year. But but receiver, you lose Kurtz I'm forgetting the guy's name right now. Anyway, you lose those guys, and you just look at what's coming back. Maybe Jonah Trinneman's going to hit his stride and become that 4-star guy everyone was thinking of, but. Man, it's kind of bare at wide receiver. There's not really anyone to pin just the production on. Just like, yeah, that guy's going to be the guy. So that's certainly a worry point. And obviously, I think running back's something you're kind of wary of. It's going to be a big drop off with Jamal Williams, just because Jamal Williams was so good. But we'll see what Squally Canada can do and some others. And yeah, we'll see with that position. But I think receiver and running back would be the two positions where it's like, let's hold our breath here. Let's see what they can come up with. So,
well, you know, you mentioned the defensive line after watching, well, at least the first 2.5 quarters of the Super Bowl. It's very disruptive if you can get a pass rush with your front four. I mean, it is a massive, and BYU hasn't been able to do that in a couple of seasons. And it shows sometimes in those big plays. But obviously on the other side of the ball, it's also true. If you can't, if your receivers can't get open, then there's the big problem for the quarterback. So Tanner Mangum's going to be taking over. You know, bold prediction time, Brandon. who do you think is his top target next year based on the talent that's on the roster? I mean, who gets the ball the most? Like you mentioned Kurtz leaving, and I look at that group and I say, I almost think like you could pick somebody out of heck, maybe it's Bushman. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Marone. I think he's a guy that wanted to switch to tight end last year and was kind of a tweener in positions. And I think he kind of got lost through the cracks, but I think he's an enormously talented kid that needs to play tight end. And I think once he can get that to that position, bulk up to 250, which I think he could do fairly easy. I really like his prospects, and with the experience and just with the need at the tight end position, I'm going to go Marone Putute. That's going to be my guy.
I think that's as good. That's certainly as good a guess as any, Brandon, because I started looking at the list and I said, wow.
There's not many options.
There's not a whole lot of options. And obviously the system's going to have to work better than the talent if they're going to be there in 2017, especially with the second opponent out of the gates, but the first game that'll really matter. Well, Brandon, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate your insight, as always, around recruiting and the ever-revolving roster of BYU football. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. We'll see you, Adam.
Matt, no one... Well, I shouldn't say no one. I think a lot of people are going to get annoyed by the beginning of this podcast.
Oh, yeah, I'm fully counting on a couple people to just try and skip through the first few minutes.
But what I have to say to those people is, I'm sorry, but there's no way we're not talking about the greatest Super Bowl game ever.
I am not sorry. I'm not even sorry a little bit. And I'm not sorry that I'm not sorry.
Okay, Matt. Don asks us the question, okay? We're not going to relive this moment by moment, though I did think about that.
That would be fun.
But we're not going to do that to the listeners. What we are going to do, though, is answer Don's question on Twitter, so we have our first tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Don asks, how high does this Super Bowl rank on your all-time games you have watched?
The highest.
You know, the 2004 Game 4 of the series versus the Yankees was pretty high. That first Super Bowl that the Patriots won in 2001, that came down to a field goal. That's pretty high up there.
Yeah, that's pretty high, but is that coming back from being down 28-3? 25 points and taking it into overtime for the win?
28-3.
It's not that good.
Did you have any doubt in your head that the Patriots were going to win it once they got to overtime?
Oh, once they got to overtime, it was over.
The coin flip happened. The Patriots were getting the ball, and I turned to my wife and my two daughters and said, game over.
That's what I said. Brady, that's what I said to my son. They said, team down. They have all the momentum.
Yeah, they're marching the down. And the problem, and this isn't a problem, because quite frankly, the Falcons' defense did enough to win. Their offense, unfortunately, decided to stop playing. But that defense got really tired, and they're not a great defense. They had a good game plan. They have a lot of speed. They have good young guys. But they were tired. Like, all that, you know, four-man pressure stuff, that was not happening in the end of the third and fourth quarter. They weren't even getting close. On that last drive, I don't think anybody breathed on Brady.
Well, no, the last three scores.
Yeah.
They could not get any pressure into the backfield.
Well, they should have started blitzing. You can't let Brady just sit back there. If you can generate pressure with your four, you're fine. But if other teams that have beat Brady in the past, the two ways to do it is get pressure with your four or blitz him and get to him before he kills you. I mean, those are the blueprints, and their defense got very conservative, and their offense... Well, maybe their offense didn't conservative. I mean, they kept passing. So I don't know if you can say that that was conservative.
Yeah, but all they needed was a field goal. It was over.
Well, but here's the argument I've heard over and over again. Why didn't they run the ball? They were averaging 8 yards a carry.
I don't know. Somebody needs to fire that offensive coordinator.
Well, luckily he's gone. So, Matt, I'm going to say it's not the best game I've ever watched. I'm going to have to give that time to percolate. I'll have to give that time to percolate. That
oh, I'm going to jump right in. That's the best.
Better than any BYU game you've ever watched.
Yes. That was awesome. How was that not the awesomest thing you've ever seen in your life?
I will tell you this. I had people...
That would be up there, like, and this was before my time. Sorry to cut you off there. But this is like Miracle Bowl type of stuff. I mean, they were dead. It was over. On ESPN, there was a 99.5% chance that the Falcons win the game.
Well, not only that.
It was over.
Not only that. They had the part, that awkward part. I think it was at halftime or right after halftime where they said, go online to vote for the Super Bowl MVP. And then the announcers didn't say anything, but they flashed to a live shot of Matt Ryan on the sideline.
Awkward.
And then Arthur Blank and wife go to the
come
sideline.
Down on the field.
Rookie,
that was the best.
Mistake. You never go down on the field until it's really over. You don't come down at the beginning of the fourth quarter. You just don't do it. It's just... but anyway, Matt, Tom Brady, best quarterback ever?
Yep.
Bill Belichick, best coach ever?
Maybe, probably, but that one I still need to think about.
I think he's the best coach ever, and I don't think it's close. It's also very hard to disconnect those two, right? Because they've never won without each other. Right, everything else has changed. Players have changed. Coordinators have changed. Everything else has changed, but they have never won without each other.
Right.
So I don't know what that means and what I'm actually even saying. But I will say, though, Matt, percent chance the Patriots in the Super Bowl again next year.
95.
No, that's insane. That's way too high. That's way too high. Come on. I'd say 60. The AFC's right now, the NFL's kind of down. I mean, people have talked about, you know, all the reasons that the NFL ratings were down this year. The election season, too many commercials.
Goodell,
cord cutters, all that stuff. I'll give you another one because I think there are a lot of reasons it's down. There's just not as good football being played as there was 10 years ago.
Well, the NFL's changing, and we've talked about that. We experienced kind of the golden age of quarterback play over the past several years, and now you're getting to the tail end of that. Guys are starting to retire, you don't replace Peyton Manning.
Well, you should be able to, because in history, in past, you did, right? But let's prove your point, Matt. Top 10 quarterbacks, according to ESPN last year in their QBR rating. Okay. Matt Ryan, is he a young guy? He's been in the league for like 10 years, so no.
Yeah, not super young.
Tom Brady's almost 40. He was the second one. Dak Prescott, okay, there's your young stud. That's the third. Aaron Rodgers, he's been around for a long time. Drew Brees, also old. Kirk Cousins is younger. Andrew Luck is younger. Matthew Stafford, not young. Tyrod Taylor, this is where we hit Matt. Tyrod Taylor was the ninth best quarterback in the NFL this year.
Right.
Would you build a franchise around Tyrod Taylor?
Nope.
If you were picking today, if you were picking to start a franchise, you pick somebody else, not a quarterback, to build around before you pick him, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll go back to the list you just read. There's only two or three of those guys.
Okay,
so I would build a franchise
around. So
Ryan, Kirk Cousins is not.
Kirk Cousins is not. Ryan took the leap, but he's always been good. But this year, he was phenomenal. He was phenomenal. Obviously, Brady, you can't build a franchise around a guy that's 40. You know what I mean? Like, you bring him in for the next couple of years, but even the Patriots have got to start looking past that. Now, Prescott, he played really, really well. But on the other hand, he had a massive running game to play off of, but that's, you know, that's fair. Rodgers, he's getting old to the point where you might not build around him, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
any team in the NFL would take Rodgers unless you're talking about the Patriots, right? Or I guess the Falcons at this point, you wouldn't replace Ryan. But, you know, Drew Brees, you're not building. Kirk Cousins, like you said, I don't know about Andrew Luck, Matt. Is he?
I know about Andrew Luck. The answer is no.
I think you do. I think this guy is. I think Matt Ryan is a lesson that you don't give up on these guys who are highly, highly talented. And no, Matt Ryan is not LDS. Do we have that tweet in
there? Yeah, so that was a tweet bag question, but you know where he's getting confused, right?
No.
Matt Ryan backed up a guy. So the only – there was an article in a paper in Utah. I don't remember which paper, but anyway, if you remember, there was – the guy that was the quarterback at Boston College when Matt Ryan arrived was a Utah guy who was LDS.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, there was a story the week of the Super Bowl. I don't remember what – it was on one of the – in one of the papers that covers BYU, one of the papers in Utah. And they went and visited him. And he's the only guy that can ever say that Matt Ryan was his backup, because Matt Ryan started all through high school and all this.
Right, and was a starter immediately in the NFL. Yeah,
right. But that's where the confusion is coming from. I believe the guy's name was Peterson.
That was Spencer Thurman asking the question off of Facebook about that. Matt Ryan is about as Irish Catholic as you get.
Yeah,
I mean, he's 100%. Irish
kid. He was named to play football at Boston College.
Yes, he most certainly was. And he was a good college quarterback for sure. I thought he'd be a good pro. Obviously, you know, he had a good career until this year. And I have no problem with him getting the MVP, by the way. Unlike a lot of Patriots fans who think it's robbery. I mean, technically his stats were a little bit better than Brady's, and he played four more games. So I don't have any issue giving. I wouldn't have any
Wait a
issue
minute.
With Brady
yet. Wait a minute. His stats, let's go back to what you just said. His stats were a little bit better than Brady's,
but he played
four more games.
Great stats, Matt. Obviously, his totals were better, but he had a higher yards per attempt. He had a better year statistically than Tom Brady did. Now, the argument could be made that Brady, you know, mailed it in a lot of games and maybe didn't have it. And Brady did have the best touchdown to interception ratio in the history of the league, which again, I would have been fine if people had given it to Brady, but this isn't an injustice. I mean, Matt Ryan had a freaking awesome year. He had an awesome
year. I mean, the guy had a good year, I guess. Okay, Matty Ice,
oh
whatever.
My gosh, stop it. Stop it, you big Boston homer. So Steve on Twitter, that's at Cougar Tier, asked this question. What is your reaction, Matt, to the hiring of Steve Sarkisian to the Falcons? So Jeremy Ashton follows that up in email by saying, Matt, will this make the Falcons your second favorite team going forward?
Asking specifically if it will make them my second favorite team because
Jeremy
of my obsession with all things 1996 BYU football?
Correct, correct. Is Sarkisian now, are the Atlanta Falcons your NFC team going into next year?
No.
But you will be rooting for that offense to do well.
Yeah, I'll always root for Steve Sarkisian to do well. I'd love to see Sarkisian become a head coach in the NFL. I think that would be cool.
And Jeremy says this, in our last podcast, we convinced him to root for the Patriots.
Yes.
We have a convert, Matt.
Hashtag missionary work.
Yeah, that's right. KVN's sack ended up being huge in allowing the – KVN had a nice – Kyle Van Noy had a nice game. His name came up a couple times by the announcers. Not a monster game or anything, but
the guy got a sack in the Super Bowl.
But he got
that's
a sack
like the greatest. Like
in
that's
the, Super
the
Bowl.
Greatest ever.
Yeah, he was. He is. I think he's going to be even better next year. I think. I mean, he doesn't play every snap right now. He plays mostly on passing downs. I bet you he is the second or third best player on that defense next year. No joke. And this isn't BYU Homer talking. This is. You read this a lot in the guys that cover the Patriots, like they talk about how quickly he picked up the system and how he's already becoming a leader on that team.
Yep.
The Detroit Lions, egg on face. I'm just saying, you guys gave
the Lions are
way
a
too
mess.
Early. Way too early on KBN. Way too early. All
they
right,
gave
man.
Up when he got hurt in year one.
Well, let's walk away from the Super Bowl, the greatest game ever played. And let's talk about...
By the greatest quarterback of all time.
By the greatest quarterback of all time. So, Matt, let's jump into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, men's volleyball had a massive weekend in a match on Friday night that, while not as exciting as the Super Bowl, was quite thrilling. A five-set match against number two UCLA, and then they came back the next night and swept UCLA. So they take two from UCLA over the weekend. They're now ranked third. They're 9-2 overall. And Ben Patch was named Player of the Week for his, I think he had 28 kills on Friday night against against the Trojans. So nice job. Not the Trojans, sorry, the Bruins. The Trojans are who they play next. The USC's not good, by the way. They're 3-8. So expect a sweep. Did you see any of this weekend?
I did not.
I only saw the highlights. I ended up having other stuff going on. So I really wish, after the fact, when I woke up on Saturday morning and looked at the score, I was like, ah, crap.
Yeah, that would have been a good one to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. Matt, before we go on, I have something. We have a sponsor for today's podcast. And once again, the sponsor is me. So I have started a new Kickstarter campaign for my new science fiction series called the Sycorax series. The first three books are going to get published end of March, beginning of April, depending on editing and a few other things as they get finished. So I will put the link in the show notes to the podcast, to the Kickstarter. It's really cool. The best part is you can go to that Kickstarter page and there is a video starring me and three of my children.
And it's a funny video. I'm not going to lie to you.
It should cause a chuckle or two, and you can learn all about the books there. And of course, last time when I did a Kickstarter more than a year ago for Pete Crosser for my epic fantasy novel, several of the listeners participated in that, and that'd be great if you could go take a look, and if you deem it worthy, throw some support behind it. So you can check that out, or go to Kickstarter.com and just search for the word Sycorax. That's S-Y. C as in Charlie, O-R-A-X as in X-ray, Sycorax. It's from Shakespeare, so the name Sycorax. I didn't plagiarize Shakespeare into a book.
Yeah. People are probably going to recognize that.
People will be like, wow, this sounds really familiar. And why is it all Old English?
It's weird.
All right, Matt, so let's go on to men's basketball. I'm going to throw something up here for you, all right? You tell me what you think. I think BYU's best game of the year was against Gonzaga.
I could get behind that.
I think the defense, despite giving up a lot of points, but we talked about this last week, Gonzaga's offense might be the best in the country. Certainly one of the best. Despite giving up 80-something points, that second half, they played extremely well, as good as I've seen them play defensively. They are now, Matt, the 31st or 32nd ranked defensive team in the country, BYU is. And I thought the offense started to click, and I think Tyler Hawes is your second banana on offense, right? And he's growing into that spot. So I have to say, I stayed up and watched that game from beginning to end, and I think it's the best game they've played. They just happen to have played the best team in the country.
See, so what's the deal? I mean, how does that happen?
How does Gonzaga become the best team in the country?
No, I mean, why can't they play at that level against Portland?
I don't know. I saw a story on Vanquish the Foe today, or maybe it was yesterday, where they talked about how they're basically the only thing consistent about the Cougars this year is their inconsistency and how it's just kind of all over the board.
Oh, I see what they did there.
Yeah, they're very clever. But it was a good piece just because, and I forget who wrote it, I may look it up here so I can give them credit, but it was a good piece in that I think we're seeing youth is what we're seeing, a lot of it. We'll get to some other issues here in a bit, but I think a big part of this is youth and consistency. I mean, we're basically talking about there's one multi-year experienced player who is playing at all, and that's LJ Rose. And quite frankly, he doesn't have that much experience. You know, he's a senior, but he didn't play, you know, this isn't like he played 60, started 60 games coming into this year. You know, he had injuries and things in his past. I think we're seeing a ton of that. And they looked like crap for the first part of that game against Gonzaga. And the second half, they looked fantastic. So, Matt, then you mentioned Portland. Not as impressive as an effort, but they won 73-62. And it was Dave Rose's 300th career victory. So congratulations.
That's pretty awesome right there.
Congratulations to Dave Rose. Heck of a coach. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. He's the best basketball coach in BYU history, I think. There are some argument about whether that is actually whether that should be the case. Obviously, Frank Arnold might have something to say about that. Had a great run and had some pretty good teams, including that Elite Eight team in 1981. But anyway, I think he's the best. I think he's the best that we've ever had. And, you know, I think he will be our coach as long as he wants to be our coach.
Yeah. I don't really see a situation where he'd be run out of town, you know.
So Matt, I want to say 4 weeks ago, you and I on this podcast said the biggest problem with the BYU team this year is its defense. Matt, it is not the biggest problem for the BYU team this year. It's not the offense has gone from mediocre to terrible. Just taking a nosedive. At the same time, the defense seems to be going upwards. The offense is going backwards. And I've got two words, Matt, and it's really easy. Okay? This is going to sound harsh, but it's true. You ready?
Uh-oh.
Nick Emery.
Oh, man.
He's in conference play, he's not even averaging double digits in scoring.
Now, what happened?
I don't know what's happened. He's not taking as many shots. His rate stats haven't changed much from the out of conference. But can't we say this isn't a slump at this point? This is just an off year, right?
Well, you got to wonder if there's something else going on, right? Is there some type of nagging injury issue or something that we're just not
last week, right? But I thought the offense. I honestly thought the offense worked better with him not in it. I would honestly, at this point, consider bringing him off the bench and starting Elijah Bryan. Not because Bryan is necessarily better, though he's played better over the last 10 games or so than Emery has. Just because I think sometimes you don't always start your five best. But Matt, this offense—if the ball isn't going to Mika or Childs, this offense is lost. There's just, like, nothing there. They don't know. Mika goes out of the game, and it becomes like, a lot of these players on the floor were high-octane offensive players in high school. And Emery was a pretty high-octane offensive player in college last year. I don't know.
So why do they look so lost when Mika comes off the court?
Well, let's go to the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
Justin Sweeney. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney.
He asks, shouldn't a team that struggles to score run some type of motion offense or half-court sets to get more uncontested shots? Hashtag tweetbag. They do run some offensive sets. The most common one that I've seen and noticed when Mika comes out is running Hawes or Emery off of screens. You know, kind of a la Reggie Miller. You know, run them through two or three screens and see if you can get them freed up for an open jump shot. I don't like that offense. I'm not a big fan. Though Hawes has been shooting threes at a high enough percentage that maybe I'm okay with Hawes doing that. But it doesn't get anybody else involved. It's highly predictable. You know, but to Sweeney's point, that they're not playing a lot of. And then it becomes a lot of somebody trying to beat somebody off the dribble, you know, the LeBron James, Kobe Bryant type of offense. And I don't think we have anybody that's...
No, we don't have the right person for that.
Or let's call it the Jimmer offense, you know, to keep it in BYU parlance. We don't have Jimmer. None of these guys are at that level offensively to do that off the dribble.
Right.
So Matt, I don't know. I don't. The biggest solution I have is
more cowbell.
More cowbell. I wish. Could we get more cowbell? Hey, I make gold. I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like you. Except when I put my pants on, I make gold records. Christopher Walken, his Super Bowl ad was a little disappointing, wasn't it?
The one with Bieber? Timberlake?
Yeah, it was okay.
Wasn't his the one with... Who was the one with the bye, bye, bye?
Yeah, bye, bye, bye. It was with Timberlake. I thought it was just okay.
It was... Listen, there weren't any real standout commercials.
What are you talking about? Just... There were a bunch of standouts. Do we have to do this again? Do we have to do this? Every year I have this argument with you that the commercials have gotten worse. And
no, I just think they're overhyped. I think they're overhyped. I think it's blown out of proportion.
I don't even know what that means. So, okay, let's roll down, okay? The seven best commercials. Okay? You tell me seven? If you thought they were good, okay?
All right, here we go.
Guacamole with the subliminal advertising.
It was okay.
I thought that one was just okay.
Skittles. That commercial could show up on Thursday Night Football.
Okay, all right. Skittles being thrown through the window and then the rotating people catching them in their mouth.
That one was funny. That one actually didn't get funny until the cat burglar came across the screen.
No, I thought the parents. Then that was funny. I thought the parents. I started laughing at the parents. Okay, not funny, but did you get chills with the Hyundai ad where they took their military families to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I did. But that's an easy heartstring puller for me.
Yes, and me too. Did you like?
I get misty watching that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh! I thought they were going to bring the families to them. You know, do the reversal of the when the guy comes back or the woman comes back and goes to their kid's school, or the halftime they go out there and he runs out. I thought they were doing the reverse when they showed their families at the Super Bowl live having fun. I'll tell you what. It got a little misty in the man cave. How about the Budweiser one with immigration from Germany? I like that one.
It's a cool story. It was timely. It was topical.
I thought it was topical. Okay, you thought that. I thought the avocado commercial was better than you did, but I can go with that. Okay, Melissa McCarthy saving the world.
I came in on the tail end of that commercial, and I haven't watched it
since. It's a little too messagey heavy for me for a comedy commercial.
She tends to be pretty funny, though.
She was funny. How about the Ford commercial where everyone is doing dumb stuff and can't get out of it? The kid with the like helmet.
The people are all stuck?
Yeah, the kid with the helmet on his big wheel, and the helmet's stuck to the wheel of the big wheel, and he can't. Mom, help me. That one was pretty awesome.
Yeah, see, now I'm laughing. So, see, yeah, I like that one. That might be my favorite one that we've talked about so far. That was fun.
I will say the Mr. Clean commercial was absolutely disturbing.
That was just weird.
I wasn't a big fan of the yellowtail with the kangaroo. Some people like that one. I don't know.
Not memorable. Don't remember it.
So maybe you're right. I remember liking... Oh, and I missed... people did not. It got a lot of... I actually liked it. The Honda commercial, where all of the famous people talk as their senior pictures.
Those pictures were weird. It was creepy.
Oh, I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool, but it got panned. It got panned. Again, I have no idea. As a marketer, I have no idea what that has to do with Honda. Like, it's a concept... That was kind of cool. You thought it was weird, but I don't have any idea what it had to do with Honda.
See, the thing, if I look back, like historically, what are some of the real famous Super Bowl commercials? Didn't the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, playing horse for the Big Mac. Didn't that start as a Super Bowl commercial?
I believe so.
That commercial didn't blow anybody's mind, but it was a good commercial and it was memorable. I wonder if it's maybe my expectations are the issue.
Yes.
Right? I'm expecting like something crazy.
Some of the famous Spuds McKenzie, they redid that one, which I thought was okay.
I had to explain that one to my son. He was like, why is there a ghost of a dog in there?
Yeah, it was a little strange.
There was this dog. He was Spuds McKenzie. He was the ultimate party animal.
Yeah. It was strange. It was strange. There's no way ifs, ands, or buts about that one. Anyway, Matt, let's get back on topic. We just took a massive detour, but let's get back. Any other thoughts on basketball before we talk about signing day?
No.
That's all you got. Matt. I think very likely they lose three more games, including this week against San Francisco. San Francisco's a top 100 team, and we have yet to beat one of those on the road. I think it's possible we lose three more games. Matt, this will be Rose's worst season since his first, and it'll be the first time, unless something miraculous happens in the next few weeks, that Rose has missed the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row.
Do we still go to the NIT, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, we go to the NIT. Are you kidding me? We fill the NIT. We get, 15,000 fans come to NIT games. Yeah, the NIT's inviting. And we'll even get at least one home game. But we're not sniffing the NCAA tournament unless we win the WCC tournament.
Oh, that's our only chance at this point. And chances of that, let's be honest.
Not very good.
Or they haven't, not high.
The consistency has not been there at any point to say they could put that kind of run together. I mean, you'd right. likely have to beat St. Mary's and Gonzaga in the same week. Not likely.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
Heck, just beating one of them seems like a stretch, a little bit of a stretch. But all right, Matt, let's talk signing day, okay?
Let's talk signing day.
So we didn't really talk about it last week. Brandon Gurney was on earlier. But let's talk about some of these guys that they signed. And we can start off with the tweetbag question.
Tweetbag.
So James Lowe on Facebook asks, with all of the incoming football players for 2017, who are you most excited to see and play? And who do you think will make the biggest impact as a first-year player? Matt, let's first, before we go to transfers or any of that kind of stuff, there's not a big chance because most of these guys are going on missions. You're not going to see a lot of these guys make any impact this year.
So, no.
But Chaz Ayu is going to play for a year, he said.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know that you see many of these guys make a big impact next year.
No, I'm just looking, and the name's escaping me right now, and I can't see it. What's the big, huge guy? He's on his mission.
Oh, yeah. He's coming back.
That's the guy I'm excited about.
Mo Longhi.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not going to play this year. He's going to redshirt for sure. He's not going to play. No. I mean, everybody's excited. He's never played football. I mean, he's not going to play. So Matt, I'll give you, let's talk about some players that definitely will be on the roster, okay? There have been some transfers. I think Tay Kirby from the defensive lineman that transferred from Oregon. Does he play this year? I think he has to sit out. So that may be a bad one. But Matt Bushman, return missionary, tight end. I think he's the biggest one. And then you've got Mika Tafua, who's returning from a missionary. Longhi, you mentioned. Brady Christensen, an offensive lineman. And then you have a few other transfers that I think will make an impact. Overall, though, Matt, I think as you look at this, you say, there's going to be some here that make an impact. but most of the players that are going to impact 2017 are already on the roster.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the tricky things about predicting this stuff for BYU, and we've talked about this in the past.
We certainly have.
The new signees, you know, a bunch of them go on missions, so you don't really know what to expect there, and then players coming back from missions are fairly unpredictable.
Yes, very. It's highly unpredictable. It's highly unpredictable, and that's just part of the thing of playing with a bunch of missionaries on the roster, right? I mean, that's just what it is. But Matt, I'm gonna throw a grenade in the middle of the room here, okay?
All right. Wow,
you ready?
I don't think you're supposed to give warning before you do stuff like that.
No, I think it's better. I think it's better if you warn people. It reminds me of that great thing from Captain America: The First Avenger when they throw the grenade and he falls on it. Steve Rogers says, "Remember that scene? You know what I'm talking about?"
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he's scrawny, when he looks like Adam circa ninth grade. Okay, let's be honest. Adam circa when he was 22.
Oh man, yeah, you're right.
I've gotten a little fatter. So. According to Rivals, and it's similar in others on other websites, BYU had the 63rd ranked recruiting class. Okay? All right?
Okay.
If Bronco had recruited this class, the fans would be asking for his head, as they were every time this year for the last two or three years that he was the coach. So why is it okay that in... Kalani Sitake's first year, as where he's had the full time to get people, that he has a 63rd ranked recruiting class, and everybody seems to be high-fiving because we got Tui Fua and Ayu, who are both fantastic, fantastic prospects. So don't take that in any way as a negative towards them.
Well, the honeymoon period or love affair, whatever you want to call it, with Sitake goes on.
Yeah, but this is
people
this
love is, the guy.
This is
we this, love him.
This is the same kind of recruiting class that Bronco brought in.
Yeah, and that was one of the selling points of Sitake, right?
He's going to
be a recruiter.
Better, he's going to be a better recruiter, right? And he did land 2 4-star guys, but he landed less 3-star guys than a lot of the classes that Bronco had. And 3-star guys, you know, people will say that's really, in a lot of ways, how you build your program. But let's go to Broncos recruiting class of 2014, okay? You ready for this?
Yeah, what do you got?
You may have heard of these two players. 2 4-star recruits joined the Cougars that year, Fred Warner and Nick Kurtz. Remember how big of a deal both of those were?
That was a huge deal.
And Warner is obviously has been terrific. Kurtz, I would say, has never lived up to that. Never did live up to that. Is that fair?
Yep.
You look at who else was on the list there on that year. There's quite a few, some good, some bad. And that's not what I'm trying to do. By the way, Matt Bushman was part of that class, and he's coming back from his mission now. Which highlights our earlier point about how hard it is to manage these rosters. Matt, Satake's got to do better than this. I'm no joke. We have to get into the top 50 recruiting classes. And that's one of the reasons he was brought in. And in his first year, I feel like there were not enough 3-star high-caliber guys behind Ayu and Tui Fua. Am I saying that right?
So how many years of this before you feel like, okay, yeah, this is just the level we're going to recruit at? Well, is it 1 season? Is it 2 seasons?
He's got until
when do you know?
Next year. I mean, Utah's recruiting class was 25th. And not that we're comparing to Utah because we don't, you know, play in the same conference with them anymore necessarily. And Utah really whiffed on some of the best Utah talent this year. We got better overall Utah talent than they did. But as a Pac-12 school, they have an easier time, and also not having to have the honor code, they have an easier time dipping into other states, right?
Right, and I think the honor code has more to do with that than the Pac-12.
Yeah, Yes, absolutely. Though they've done better since they got to the Pac-12. It gives them a little bit more cachet, and they play in California and can, you know, that can use that to their advantage. But my point is, even a bigger point, Matt, this class really depends on if Tuifua and IU are as good as we think they could be. And then do some of those three stars and even the two star guys outplay their ranking. Right? And if that starts to happen, then the rating services may then reflect an interest from Satake and the BYU staff as being a reason to move somebody up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Ben Bywater, the three-star linebacker, does he become the next BYU linebacking star? You know, I don't know. You know, does Tariq Buchanan, the wide receiver out of Texas, is he the next Jamal Williams, meaning he's a two- or three-star guy, but he should have been a five-star? You know what I mean? But I have to say, I'm not looking at this and going, wow, he's a much better recruiter than Bronco and his staff were. I don't think the evidence is there. The stories are great, but in the end, the proof is in the class you bring in.
Well, and for me, though, I think that the way the class performs carries a lot more weight than the ranking.
Oh, absolutely.
So if what he's done is identified a whole series of kind of diamond in the rough type of talent, and then coupled that with a couple of big-time four-star recruits, and he's just better at identifying the right guys, then I'd say that's just as valuable, if not more so, than high-ranking draft classes. And if you do that for a couple of years, like you referenced a minute ago, your rankings will go up.
Yeah, because people will start saying, oh, wow, Satake's staff is interested in this person. I better take another look at that tape, right? Because, you know, these recruiting services, people bag on them all the time. They get things right more often than they get things wrong, you know? And if you look at NFL rosters, most of the roster is filled with 4, 5, and 3-star guys. There are exceptions to that. But, you know, nowadays with all the technology and how many people cover recruiting and the tape that's available at the high school level that didn't used to be available, I mean, they can get a good idea on a guy. Now, it's never going to be foolproof, right? I mean, IU might be the best thing we've ever had. He might not. And one of these 2-star guys might end up being a future BYU Hall of Famer, right? Jay Keeb was supposed to be amazing. Jamal Williams was kind of lightly recruited, you know, and became the best BYU running back in history, you know. And there are counterexamples both directions. But in the end, if you start looking back at these lists, as I've been doing the last week, these guys, most players ended up where they were ranked, their career. You know, the 2-star guys were contributors and good players, but nothing special. 3-star guys were better than that, and the 4- and 5-star guys were the best that we've had. Kyle Vannoy, okay, is an example on that positive side. And, yeah, there's always going to be crazy stories where somebody hasn't played football, but let's not count on that filling our program with guys from Tonga and Africa who've never played, right? Like,
did you know that Ziggy had never played football?
No, I haven't heard that. Ziggy,
crazy.
Who?
Put his pads on backwards.
Ezekiel Ansah. All right, Matt. Well, that is talking about the signing day. Do you have any other Super Bowl moments you'd like to relive, or have we pounded that into the ground good enough?
I don't know. I guess I could relive the time that the Patriots came back from being down 25 points and won the game.
Or when Julian Edelman caught that ball that should never have been caught.
Oh, my gosh.
That was fantastic.
You know what? That made – I've had a lot of pain over the Tyree helmet catch.
Oh, this totally makes up for all that.
I can totally let that go now. I've let it go.
Yes. Yes, I can let it go as well. The other play that, quite frankly, still boggles my mind every time I see it is Hightower's strip fumble sack.
Yeah.
What was the running back? Who was the running back looking for to block on that play?
Nobody who was there, I'll tell you that.
I mean, if it had been any time earlier in the season, that guy gets benched, right, for a game? Or gets highly reprimanded. But what are you going to do? It's a Super Bowl. It's the last game of the year. Holy crap, man. That was, I mean, the Patriots, and this is true in any close game, your success or failure depend very much on one or two split-second decisions.
Yep.
And sometimes a lucky bounce of a ball gets popped up, and Elbin catches it off.
Caught it off of this guy's leg. I mean, that was insane.
And kept it up.
How did he keep it off the turf?
I don't know. I don't know. So Matt, I'm just going to end with this. I know a lot of people think the Patriots are cheaters, and technically, that's true. They have been caught cheating before. Okay? All right? So let's get that out of the way. All right? But here's what I'm going to say. Tom Brady, you proclaimed him the best quarterback ever earlier on this show.
Yep.
Tom Brady is the best quarterback ever. He now owns pretty much every meaningful quarterback record. He's won the most games, won the most Super Bowls, had the most Super Bowl MVPs, though I'm not sure what that means because the quarterback almost always gets the Super Bowl MVP. He led a team to a 25-point comeback in the Super Bowl. He's led two game – this is now what he's had, three game-winning drives in Super Bowls, right? Or four?
I'm thinking of three, but I could be off.
I don't think – none of them against the Seahawks would be considered game-winning, right? And that's true with the Eagles as well. But against the Panthers and the Rams and this game, he – you know, led game-winning drives. I get it. He's a pretty boy. He's married to a supermodel. All that stuff. But we should just, as football fans, it's pretty special to watch this guy operate. You know?
Yeah, and that's something I was talking to somebody about that over the weekend. I mean, we all need to take a minute and appreciate what we're seeing. You know, and as much as people hate on the Patriots, and, you know, but what they're doing right now is amazing. And as a sports fan, you've got to be able to appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. And I only have one other thing to say about the Super Bowl map. You ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Suck it, Goodell.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I just absolutely love the fact that he had to hand Robert Kraft the trophy, and Kraft then basically goes on a 5-minute rant about how much they were playing for this year and how tough the last 18 months have been for their franchise.
And I loved how bad the fans were booing Adele the whole time he was talking.
Oh my gosh, it was fantastic.
You almost couldn't hear his whiny little voice.
Well, the thing is, does he have any personality at all? Like, seriously. Like, the guy, like, when Pete Rozelle handed these things out, when David Stern did it in the NBA, like Adam Silver does it now, they have, like, a smile and they show, like, personality. They don't make it about them, which they shouldn't, because you're the commissioner and this team just won the championship. It should be about them. But, like, dude, and this was true every year. This isn't, like, some people say, well, it's because it's the Patriots. No, this was true every year he's handed out that trophy. He looks like an uncomfortable dad marrying their kid off to some terrible human being. Like, he looks like he just doesn't want to be at the wedding. You know? And it's like, this is the crowning event of your sport, man. Like, crack a smile. Have a good time a little bit, you know?
Enjoy it. All did.
I enjoyed it. I was jumping around like a crazy person. Went up, woke up the two kids that I had put to bed, the two oldest. Actually,
I was worried that I'd woke up half the neighborhood.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I did quite a bit of screaming and jumping. If video exists, which I will deny, I might look quite ridiculous.
Yeah, but we're just talking about your Super Bowl reaction here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
The joke about you looking ridiculous.
Hey, that's not nice. We can't end this on a terrible dad joke.
The dad joke.
Actually, we totally can. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Reminder, go check out the Sycorax series on Kickstarter. Just go to kickstarter.com and search Sycorax. Also, join our Facebook group, facebook.com/riseandshout, if you have not done so already. Heck, we got Gary Payne to join Twitter just to follow the podcast. Hey,
Payne train.
Go on to Facebook just to follow us. I don't know if that's actually worth it.
We're the best thing on Facebook right now.
Oh, my gosh. That is so true. That is so true. Facebook, it's like it's a dystopian wasteland.
Facebook has become so weird. Why did it get so weird? Instagram's fine. Twitter's cool.
You want to know why Facebook's weird? Because people are weird. And they say stuff on their Facebook wall that they would never actually say to you.
It's crazy, but it's so true.
I believe the world is flat. Did you just write that on your Facebook wall?
Yeah, okay. I did. Now we're in the comment section. Yeah, I did write that. Yeah. And if you don't agree with me, clearly you're either stupid or you just don't know the things that I know.
Suck it, Goodell.
That's how stupid Goodell is.
That's like the new Boston.
Facebook? That's Goodell's fault.
That's right.
Goodell ruined Facebook
into the ground. This is the new thing. It used to be, you know, at any Boston sporting event, a Yankees suck chant could just break out. Actually, not sporting event. I've been on the subway in Boston where it started, and it wasn't even baseball season. Just people start chanting, "Suck it, Goodell." That's the new one.
Yep.
It'll be the new
actually
chant.
From now on, the like zero to McMahon scale should be Goodell to McMahon.
Ah. No, that's an insult to the number zero.
Oh wow!
Oh, little dad math joke there. All right, wow. We've had too many. We've hit our math joke quota and our dad quote joke quota on this podcast already.
We've exceeded the dad quote. Yeah,
we haven't. We're
I can't dads. Talk. I apparently can't talk.
I'm 40. I'm a man. I'm 40.
I'm just gonna stop talking and let you bring it home.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. We will be back maybe next week. We'll see. Next week or the week after to talk hoops. And, you know, we're going to start looking at the 2017 football season. We're going to do it. You can't stop us. So thanks.
Because that's where we're at. That's all we have left right now. This is like the wasteland of sports between college basketball tournaments. And
this is the wasteland. This is the wasteland right now, and BYU.
Yeah, this is the cold, dark off season.
Unfortunately, it's not filling that void as it has in other times, but
not anyway. Right now.
All right. Well, thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Yo, Cougars!